Well, good morning, everyone. So I mentioned this on Wednesday, but I gave a Wednesday night invitations talk on anger, and Jason mentioned that that would be a helpful thing to do in a full lesson. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought that would be very, very helpful for us to give more time to that. And something that came out from that Wednesday night invitation and struggles afterward, or conversations afterward, is that anger and struggling with anger is something I think we all share in common. And I would say if you don't struggle with anger, you're either not human, or you just don't care about things or people like you should, or you're just not honest. Anger is something I think is inescapably something that we struggle with because we have relationships, we have difficult relationships, we have close relationships. And so I think it's important to understand that this is something that we all deal with, and I think all deal with very, very regularly. It's probably something that most of us, if not all of us, have struggled understanding how to deal with in a godly way. For me, and this is something I'll talk about more through the lesson, you know, this isn't just like a theoretical lesson for me, right? Anger is one of the things that I've struggled the most with in terms of explosive anger, sinful anger. And so this is something that I've really had to dig deep in. It's something that I continue to need to dig deep in. And anger can really thrive in secrecy, right? So I really want to be clear here. Anger has probably done more to hurt my wife and my relationship with my wife than anything else. You know, it's made me very thankful that God is able to heal things. He equips us to forgive and equips wives to forgive and show grace to their husbands and husbands to their wives. But Eva has seen me at my lowest. She has seen me raise my voice and become explosive. And that's something that you may think, wow, you know, I can't imagine, but Eva can. We've all then, I think, it's safe to say with this, we all know what it means to be deeply hurt by someone else's anger. I think we've all been hurt by someone expressing their anger, whether that's through loud shouting, shouting words, or even someone out of anger saying something calmly that is just extremely hurtful and creates within us deep insecurities and hurt. It's also safe to say that I think we've all hurt others with our anger, and we've all seen people deeply hurt by our anger. And so this is, again, this is something that is it's so critical for us to think through this. It's so critical for us to think about God's wisdom with this. And we'll get to Matthew 5. That will be kind of the main focus eventually, but we're going to kind of get there after looking at some other passages. And I want to start by introduction. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. You know, we live in a very angry culture, and outside of the wisdom of God, the world really isn't equipped, I think, to understand the seriousness of the problem of anger or deal effectively with the true roots of anger and to see the consequences of anger. And so the reality is we need God to help us understand how to navigate this problem. Well, in Ephesians 4, verse 31, this has been one of the most helpful passages for me to think about how to deal with this problem. And it's because this passage gives us a mission. Ephesians 4, verse 31 says, "Let all bitterness and anger and wrath and shouting and slander be put away with you, along with all malice. Instead, be kind to one another, tender-hearted, graciously forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has graciously forgiven you." So this may be difficult to navigate, right? Like, it requires wisdom to even know how to do this. But in verse 31, how much anger should we be trying to put away? You know, is it that there's just some anger, or, you know, just like the explosive anger, you know, there's the outward manifestations of anger? No. Verse 31 really deals with the gambit, a whole family of terms that we'll also see in Galatians 5 in a moment. It starts from the inward and actually works its way out. So in verse 31, we're to let all bitterness be put away. And bitterness is like when we allow anger to take root within ourselves, right? So that's the inner root of anger. And then we're to get rid of the feeling of anger, right? And I know that may seem strange when we talk about how, like, we're going to deal with anger. You know, we're going to have to face anger as an emotion, I think, nearly every day when we're dealing with difficult situations and relationships. So what this isn't saying, it's not saying that you're not going to feel anger or that anger is not going to present frequent temptations. It's that the way that we deal with anger is not to give into it, not to allow it to linger. It's not that we tolerate it. It's that we, in everything we do with anger, the mission is to put it away and put away it entirely. And then you have the outward expression. So it started with bitterness, the inward root, anger, the feeling on the surface. And then you have wrath, shouting, slander being put away from you. And those would be like outward manifestations of explosive outbursts of anger, right? So we're on a mission to put away all anger. So I just want to like start the lesson asking you that question. Have you made that your mission yet? Like, have you made it your mission that in your household, in your life, you have a zero tolerance policy with anger? And again, this isn't that we're not going to struggle with anger. It doesn't mean that we're not going to even sin with anger and realize like, whoa, I just did something. I said something where that was obviously letting my anger loose. So it's not that we're not going to deal with that. It's that we need to be ready to catch ourselves and humble ourselves and repent when we face those moments, right? So, okay, first of all, God puts us on a mission to put away anger. So back to the title of the lesson. Since this is something that we deal with so frequently and is something that I think we have all struggled giving into, it requires wisdom to actually fulfill the mission that we're given here in Ephesians 4:31. So the way that we're going to do this, we're going to take the principles from a lesson last week and apply them to anger. And you don't need to go back and listen to the lesson. I'll just review really simply that there's three principles of godly wisdom. So the first thing we're going to kind of see with this lesson is wisdom begins with Jesus. Jesus is the fulfillment of everything true wisdom involves. Jesus is the fulfillment of everything true wisdom involves, right? And what we looked at last week, what that means is Jesus's wisdom is opposed to what feels natural. So God's methods for dealing with wisdom aren't going to feel good to us. They're not going to be comfortable. It's not going to make sense. There's methods we're going to look at where it's going to make us feel really foolish. It's going to make it feel like we're losing an argument that we shouldn't be losing or losing in a situation where we are on the right side. We know we're right. So applying Jesus's wisdom is like the cross. It's going to feel like dying. It's going to feel like losing. It's going to feel foolish. But we've got to accept the fact that that is just the nature of wisdom in Jesus, right? Number two, wisdom is built on what is certain according to the Lord. And we're going to see that the way that Jesus talks about anger in Matthew 5, he gives us a sense of certainty that we have to trust by faith. You know, Jesus, when he talks about the consequences of anger, the consequences of unreconciled relationships, he doesn't speak in ambiguity or like, you know, there's a chance that God might be upset about this, but it's kind of a gamble. No, he says, if you're angry with your brother, you will be guilty before the Lord, right? So again, Jesus builds his wisdom on what is certain. So we need to respond to what we need to respond to what is certain without suffering the consequences. Last week we talked about what this implies is wisdom responds to the beginning of a path because of recognizing where that path leads and ends, right? Wisdom sees the end from the beginning. And then the third thing that we looked at is wisdom focuses on the right things and values things the right way. And ultimately, Jesus's teaching on dealing with anger helps us change what we focus on and change the way we value people, right? So if we listen to him, it's going to change the way that we think and it's going to change our values with people. All right, so again, kind of on the process of getting to Matthew 5, turn back probably just like a page or two here in Galatians chapter 5. And I debated a little bit if this was something that was worth really delving into because to me it's like, obviously, anger is a problem, right? But the more I thought about it and talked with others about this, the more it became apparent that anger is something that I think we tend to treat much too casually. And it's so easy to not treat anger with the kind of seriousness that God calls us to. So start with Galatians 5, 19 through 21. And here we're going to see some words that are similar to what we already saw in Ephesians chapter 4. So Galatians 5, 19 through 21. Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery. And here we get into some words related to anger, a family of terms, enmities, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you just as I have forewarned you. Notice this, that those who practice these things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So in the LSB and New American Standard translations, verse 20, it says outbursts of anger. Did you know that having an outburst of anger is a sin? And that it's in the same list, very close at the beginning of verse 20, to something like idolatry. So how serious should we treat outbursts of anger, giving into anger? You know, is that something where we like feel, you know, kind of bad, but you know what? It was kind of justifiable in the moment. The person was just really pushing me and they really needed to know they had to back off. Or is this like idolatry where there's no justification, right? That we need to pursue conviction. Even if that conviction doesn't feel natural, even if I feel justified, it really doesn't matter. Because God says that outbursts of anger and the practice of that, if not checked, if not repented of, it will keep people out of the kingdom of God. So how should we feel about that? How serious should we be that when we notice we have acted or spoken out of anger, what should we do about that? Is that something that we should tolerate? Is that something that shouldn't convict us? And I want you to think about different ways anger might manifest itself in an outburst. You know, for some people, I think particularly for men, an outburst of anger may be shouting, screaming, hitting, you know, hopefully not a person, but, you know, sometimes it can be hitting objects, hitting yourself. It might come in the form of clenching, and I know it might sound silly, like growling, like you get so angry, you've got to let it loose, and that can be very scary for someone. But it might be more subtle, right? There's different ways that an outburst might manifest based on someone's personality or disposition. You know, for some people, it might be giving their spouse the silent treatment. Now, there's a time to tell someone like, hey, like, we've got to maybe hold off for a minute. I need time to kind of like get myself in control here. There's a time to communicate that. There's a time to communicate, you know, we need some space so that we don't just, you know, rip each other apart. But there's an important distinction between that and I'm not going to talk to this person to punish them because they need to know they've done bad and now they're in the doghouse, right? So again, just think about that an outburst of anger may not just come in the form of what immediately comes to mind. There may be other expressions where if you're really honest, if you're really thinking about your intention, there's things that can seem justifiable that really it is an expression of anger, just as shouting would be. It's just being done in a different kind of way. So we just need to be very careful about those things. Just like when God warns about other sins, we really need to be careful then to cultivate a sense of sensitivity and personal accountability with those things, and we'll talk more about it. Turn to Proverbs 19. We will look at a few different Proverbs with this lesson. But I think to kind of give some weight to how common a struggle anger is, the Proverbs speak a lot about anger and the foolishness of anger and the wisdom of being slow to anger and self-controlled. But look at Proverbs 19:19. The point of this is anger is something that is actually very addicting. And I would argue that it's actually just like pornography addiction. And we'll talk more about that here in just a moment. Proverbs 19:19. A man of great wrath will bear the penalty. Some translations say a man of great wrath must bear the penalty. For if you deliver him, you only have to do it again. Because it's habitual. Now, how does this work? And why does it say he must bear the penalty or will bear the penalty? You know, pornography addiction, when you're in a certain setting or situation, you know, your body gets the sense of inner tension and pressure, which is that temptation to give in. And it can feel like eventually it just becomes too much and you seek relief, you know, in a sinful way by giving in to what your body is telling you. This is what you need to do right now to relieve this growing tension within yourself. You know, giving into anger is just like that. Where we train ourselves, where we're in a certain situation, the tension is rising in my body, and anger exploding or giving into it in a way that may seem more subtle can feel like a relief. You know, that this is just, it's too much now. I've got to give in. I've got to let the steam off because the pressure is just mounting up and mounting up, and I just can't control it anymore. And so you just let loose your anger. And I'll tell you again, in principle, it's the same thing as someone feeling overcome with bodily pressure and they just feel like they have to give in to watching pornography to get relief. Giving into anger is the same thing. And when we feed that in our bodies, we train ourselves, we train our brains to continue giving in. And then verse 19, we just end up in a cycle. Every time you face a situation that gives you that temptation or makes your pressure come up, you just over and over again are giving into temptation. It doesn't matter if people talk to you about it. It doesn't matter seeing the hurt faces. If you are not willing to dig deep, if you are not willing to make serious changes, you're just going to keep going in the cycle again and again. Just like pornography addiction, it feels like it's comforting, it's empowering. And so you have to deal with the reality of unfelt consequences, right? That even though this feels good, even though this feels relieving, there are incredible consequences for what I'm doing. That I have got to start digging deep and I have got to start thinking a lot more about what I'm really doing and what God says about that, right? So when you deal with something addictive, the effort you have to invest to uproot that addiction needs to be something really extreme, right? And so again, with the problem of anger, I think what happens way too often is we don't treat anger seriously enough. And so we just end up in a cycle of anger repeating itself over and over. And look at Proverbs 22. Another thing is anger is something that is extremely influential, especially on your kids. So Proverbs 22, 24 through 25, and we're going to talk for just a bit about this because I think this is a particularly important point. Proverbs 22, 24 through 25. Do not befriend a man of anger, and do not come along with a man of great wrath, lest you learn his ways and take on a snare against your own soul. The idea is anger and how we deal with anger is something we learn. And most often, I think we learn it from others. So I'll kind of tell you about the cycle of my family. So my dad grew up in a very violent household. His dad was not a Christian. He was a World War II veteran. This is my grandfather. He was a World War II veteran. And he was a very angry, very violent, volatile man. And my dad's household was so violent, like his mom too. His mom was also just as violent as his dad was. I've heard my dad say in the past, I haven't heard him say this in a long time. I don't know if he would say this now. But when I was younger, my dad has reflected that he wished his parents would have divorced so that they would have just stopped the cycle of terrifying violence. Well, when I was younger, my dad was still a new Christian, right? So his parents weren't Christian, so he obeyed the gospel when he was an adult. So when I was born, he was still a new Christian in many ways. Well, my dad had a problem with anger. And I saw my dad explode many times when I was younger. And he's doing great now, my dad. Those things are things that God has really helped him overcome dramatically, and he's focused on overcoming those things. But when I grew up, that really impacted me, so I became a very angry person. I remember growing up, when I would get angry, I would punch myself. I would throw things against walls. I would scream. And where did I get that? It's just repeating an influence being passed on from generation to generation. I talked to some older brethren about this topic and what their thoughts were. And something they mentioned was your kids are going to struggle with anger. They will. your kids are going to struggle with anger, and how the parents handle their emotions is something that can be very easily overlooked and taken for granted. One older brother said it this way: parents whose emotions are untempered, they will build their home with their right hand and tear it down with their left. And what this older brother was meaning is some parents, they're godly, and they have untempered anger. And this older brother reflected on how there's a preacher friend of his who had a father who wrote hymns and was well known among brethren in his generation. So, okay, just to make the connection, this older brother I sought counsel from, which is Larry Rouse, by the way. So Larry's friend had a father who wrote hymns that were very encouraging, very influential brother. Larry's friend, it made him sick when his father would hand out the hymns he wrote about loving your children, because that older brother, Larry's friend's father, was a very angry man in his household. Didn't repent, never cared to deal with it. And that child suffered growing up in that household. Again, so anger can be something very secretive. It can be something that parents, they're godly in a lot of ways, but with anger, they will let it loose. The person you will hurt the most is your children. And the shrapnel of our anger hurts those closest to us. I get it. Kids test your temper. You know, I don't have kids, but that's something that it's obvious. Kids push you to your limits and then push you even further than that. So how do you handle that? You know, you're going to get angry with kids. You're going to lose your temper with kids. This is a reality. Another brother I sought advice from, he reflected how you have to cultivate accountability in your family. And how do you do that? With yourself first. This brother I sought counsel from said he has a zero tolerance policy with himself and his whole household. That when he speaks out of anger, which happens, he talks to his family about it. He apologizes to his kids. He makes sure they understand that that is unacceptable. That is not the way that we talk. That is not the way we handle our emotions. And his rule that is take it or leave it, I'm just communicating what he told me. He said that another rule he has is raising voices is only for emergencies. Again, he has a zero tolerance policy with anger, and he's tried to be very sensitively aware. Anger is something that is very influential. Anger is something that hurts hearts very deeply. And you know, your kids don't have the ability, you know, I look back on my childhood, kids don't have the ability to say, hey mom, hey dad, your anger really traumatized me deep down just now. That's just something you have to know, right? That kids have very vulnerable, very sensitive hearts, and when they see you blow up, it is going to hurt them. But kids are so forgiving. Kids are so gracious. And there's so much good that happens when you see the problem of anger as an opportunity to demonstrate humility, and to demonstrate humility where you will ask your kids to forgive you for blowing up. That will stop the cycle of anger. Unrestrained anger is different, is addictive. An unrestrained temperament will be passed on to children. And so again, it's critical we understand anger is an extremely dangerous thing that has to be handled with a great deal of wisdom. That leads us to Jesus's words in Matthew 5. Right. So really what we've done is we've been saying in many different ways, you know, anger is a very serious problem. But I would argue that Jesus, in these few verses, gives us everything we need to learn the discipline of maturing and developing, being slow to anger, being patient, and understanding the kind of applications and solutions that help heal the roots of anger that are really, I think, planted in all of us when we're trying to serve the Lord, right? So in Matthew 5, just to kind of emphasize how common and important this is Jesus's first sermon in the Gospels. And this is the first area of the sermon where he gets practical. So Matthew 5, verses 3 through 20, Jesus is starting with principles. So it's not necessarily like practical application yet. It's more laying the groundwork, laying principles. Well, in Matthew 5:21, what is the first practical application? Of all things Jesus could talk about, of all things that Jesus could emphasize, what's the first practical point he makes in any sermon? Verse 21. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not murder. And whoever murders shall be guilty before the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, or you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Sanhedrin. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into fiery hell. Therefore, so note this is connected as relating to this problem of anger and solving it. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are on the way with him, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Truly, I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last quadrants or cent. So, okay, with wisdom again. Number one, Jesus is the fulfillment of all that true wisdom involves. And this means what he says is not what naturally makes sense or naturally feels good, right? You know, verse 21 makes sense. You murder somebody and you're going to be found by the court to be guilty for that, ideally. But verse 22, Jesus pulls in the boundary of accountability shockingly close. Jesus says that when we're angry, the King James and New King James say angry without cause, but most every other translation just says angry with your brother, which seemingly agrees with Ephesians 4:31, that anger is something we need to really be careful to put it away, right? Don't linger on it. Don't justify it. Put it away. Everyone who is angry with his brother is guilty. All right. So number two, wisdom is built on what is certain. So wisdom first is fulfilled in Jesus, meaning it's not natural. And then number two, wisdom is built on what is certain. In verse 22, what is certain? You know, Jesus says, when you are angry, here's what you can expect. You should already recognize you're guilty. And so what should you do with that? Make a change. Be convicted. Repent. Work on navigating that in righteousness, not on your own, right? The idea is Jesus commands me. This isn't advice. This is an instruction he's giving here. We've got to change the way that we recognize and respond to the danger of anger. You know, Ephesians 4 also says, be angry and do not sin and do not give the devil an opportunity. And Paul in Ephesians 4 there isn't saying that you have permission to be angry, just, you know, don't sin. What he's saying is anger immediately puts you in danger. And Satan is looking for an open door, an opportunity to use your anger to do destructive things, right? So recognize that anger is dangerous. Now, here's the thing. If I see anger this way, am I going to deal with conviction less frequently or more frequently? As in, am I going to feel less guilty or more guilty? You know, the problem is with anger, it's inherently something that we tend to feel justified to feel. But Jesus doesn't give us the ability to justify our anger, right? Anger kind of inherently makes us guarded. And I want to give two examples of this. One is from our Bible class this morning. So there's Cain and Jonah. There's really only two people in the Bible. God tried to talk to them specifically about their anger. And really, he asks them the same question ultimately. So Cain, he says, why are you angry? Is it right for you to be angry? And you know, like we saw, Cain didn't respond. And then Jonah chapter 4. Jonah's angry that God did not destroy Nineveh. And God says, is it right for you to be angry? Jonah doesn't respond, just like Cain didn't. Well, God actually does some things to instigate Jonah's anger again. Like he causes a plant to shade Jonah in the heat. Jonah's really happy about that. Then God causes a worm to cut the plant down to eat away at it. And then Jonah's angry because the plant is gone. The sun is burning him. So God says again, is it right for you to be angry? Do you remember what Jonah says? He said, it is right for me to be angry even to death. And, you know, I was asked by someone recently, I was talking to a preacher I met at a coffee shop, and he asked me, what are the hills you'll die on? And what he's meaning is, like, what are points where it's like, you are going to die on that point? Jonah was going to die on that hill. What he was saying is, God, you can't convince me otherwise. I will die on this hill. I have the right to be angry. Because anger makes us feel right. It is inherently something where we have this built-in sense of justice, even if it becomes misaligned. And the temptation of feeling angry is, I'm right to feel this way. I'm justified to feel this way. What I'm trying to say is, we've got to be really careful about that. And we have to allow ourselves to feel guilty and convicted. But I want you to notice that this can be a blessing if we go back to Matthew 5, verse 3 and 4. Conviction is not an inconvenience. It is not counterproductive. Naturally, it feels that way, right? Naturally, I feel convicted. That's bad. Naturally, I feel guilty. That's bad. And you can easily even get wore out and weary of, oh, I'm feeling anger again. And oh, here we go again. Matthew 5, verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Do you know what Jesus' teaching requires after the Beatitudes? Is that we remember the Beatitudes. Because Jesus' teaching is going to confront us with being more convicted, feeling a lot more guilty about things. And so we've got to learn to see the blessing of being convicted, the blessing of humbling ourselves and being poor in spirit, the blessing of letting ourselves mourn, and finding comfort in the Lord. It's a blessing to be convicted. People who don't handle conviction by the grace of God don't know the gospel like they should. You know, anger is dangerous because it confronts us with a decision. And that decision matters. We can either navigate things the way that Jesus tells us to and put away anger effectively, or we can navigate anger the way that we want, the way that feels better, and cause a lot of damage and potentially a lot of trauma. Well, giving into anger also destroys healthy communication. We see that as well in verse 22. Jesus addresses speaking out of anger, saying, you good for nothing, or you fool. The idea is you're saying cutting words out of anger, expressions of anger. And again, this can come in many forms. I think couples oftentimes have their own secret language, right? Like, you know what can really hurt your spouse. You know their areas of deep vulnerability. So you know how to, like, say some sly things that can really hit into those insecurities. But I wanted to think about how this fulfills the wisdom of the Proverbs. Go back to Proverbs 12, verse 15. You can keep your marker in Matthew 5. And Proverbs just kind of continues giving us some images to see all of this with a little more clarity. Proverbs 12, verse 15. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. You know, the idea of being rash is you're not being thoughtful, right? So what Jesus says is, before you say that cutting remark, remember, if you say this, you're only increasing your guilt. You're only making the situation worse, right? Again, even if it might feel good, even if it might feel empowering, it's foolish, it's rash, and it's like the thrust of a sword. It's like you're dealing a death blow. The tongue of the wise, people who consider God's wisdom, people who consider what God says is better, the tongue of the wise brings healing, right? A completely different path. Look at chapter 15, verse 1. This is one of my favorite memory verses in the entire Bible. This is such an incredibly helpful, practical, one single verse. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I don't think any of us deep down enjoy conflict, but we can certainly do a lot of things thoughtlessly to preserve conflict, to escalate tensions. You know, but Proverbs 15, verse 1, this is so helpful. A gentle answer, calming down, speaking thoughtfully, lowering your tone, that de-escalates. Whereas if we're continuing to be sharp, harsh, loud, that's just going to stir up more anger. And the more anger that gets stirred up, what is that stirring up? You know, is that helping? is that really doing anything that is making the situation better or helping anyone's hearts? And I want you to go to Matthew chapter 5, back to Matthew chapter 5, and we'll look at the rest of what Jesus says. That these next illustrations require communication, right? Like, you're not going to do these next things without speaking words that are not hurting. Instead, they're words that are helping. And Jesus doesn't tell us what to say. I think the idea is when you start applying this wisdom, God is going to help you to learn to communicate better when at its foundation, you are willing to do things like this. So Matthew chapter 5, how do we even more practically heal from the problem of anger, mature in self-control? Well, verse 23, therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. So that's situation number one. Now, with both of these illustrations, these situations here, you know, the idea is we may not be in this situation exactly, but we need to have the wisdom to recognize what is similar. Like, what's a situation like this that we can then do something like this in? So let's think about this, because in both of these situations, I think naturally we would disagree with what Jesus says here. So verse 23, you've brought your offering in an Old Testament context. You've come all the way to the temple to make a sacrifice. And you know, like, there's a lot of people who lived in Jerusalem, but the majority of the Jews did not live in Jerusalem. So the idea is, like, you've come a long way. You know, you've done a lot of work already to get there. And when you're there, you're at the altar, and you remember, not that you have something against someone else, but that they have something against you. And you could think, like, I'm already here, let me make this sacrifice, and then, you know, I'll go meet my brother who has a problem with me. Does Jesus say that? He says, leave your offering there. So kind of like tell the priest, like, hey, hold on to this, I'll be back. And then you go and you find that brother and you get reconciled with him. You know, how are you going to need to approach that? What are you going to need to say to get that done? You know, Jesus leaves that up to you. But you have a mission now. You need to go and be reconciled. And I'll tell you another way that I think we disagree with this. I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, if they have a problem with me, they need to come to me. I've heard older brethren who have been Christians for decades say that. And it's crossed my mind, one of the first things Jesus talked about was the opposite of that. You know, where's the teaching of Jesus? Where's the wisdom of God here, right? Again, anger and conflict, it's so easy to disagree thoughtlessly with what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, they have the problem with you, not you with them. Well, you still leave and you go and come back. The idea is anger's power over me is subdued when I start making extreme sacrifices to heal conflicts. That's going to require a lot of humility, right? But again, we've got to really dig deep in what Jesus says here. Look at the next illustration he gives. In 24 through 26, rather 25 through 26. Make friends quickly with your opponents at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge and the judge to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Truly, I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last quadrant. So the situation here has escalated. You know, this has become so messy. You're taking each other to court. You're going before a judge. You know, so not only is the other person escalating this, you've obviously participated in this for it to get to this point. And how difficult is it when things have escalated to pull back and change how you're thinking about the entire situation? And I'll tell you why you'll continue in the situation without listening to Jesus. Why are you going to court in the first place? Because you know you're right. And you know they're wrong. And they owe you something. And so you're going to court because they're not agreeing with you. They're not being reasonable. So now you've got to get the law involved. Because if they're not going to listen, if they're unwilling to yield, then you're going to have someone else deal with the situation and force them lawfully to give you what is due. And so verse 26, the idea is, I'm going to win. I'm in this situation because I'm right. Notice Jesus says, truly I say to you, you've already lost. We've got to stop this thinking like, I need to win. I'm right. You know the hardest thing about putting away anger is that means we've got to let go of justice. You know, Jesus later would say, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But then he said, whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. Someone presses you 1 mile, you've got a busy day, you've got a lot going on, well, go with him too. Someone wants to take your tunic, give him your coat also. You know that's the gospel? You know, when Jesus died on the cross, was God desperately clinging to justice? Or, to put away his anger, was God letting go of justice? When God is right, when it is fair that we are punished, was God clinging to justice? I'm right, they're wrong, they've sinned, they need to come to me first. Or is the cross, God leaves heaven? And he goes and he makes things right. And he pays the price and he tries to make friends with his opponent at law on the way before the damage is finalized and we can escape wrath. What are we to do about that? You know, as unreasonable, as crazy as this sounds, all Jesus is doing is giving us a practical scenario that illustrates the gospel. Again, is that going to feel foolish? You know, that I've escalated a situation. You know I'm right. Someone's got to make the step. And those are kingdom citizens who do that. The hardest part about putting away anger is letting go of justice, or what I may think is justice. We'll close with Proverbs 15, verse 18, to kind of summarize the situation. Proverbs 15, verse 18. You know, Jesus earlier in the sermon said, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Again, mercy demands letting go of my sense of justice. He said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Proverbs 15, 18, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger equips you to do what? Jesus gives us something to do with putting anger into control, quieting disputes, healing conflicts, de-escalating tension. Is that difficult? Yes. Does that require painfully denying the feeling of escalating anger within myself that feels like if I don't shout, it has no outlet? If I don't hit, then there's just nothing I feel like I can do. I feel trapped. Maybe we need to dig deeper into prayer. And maybe we need to think more in those critical moments about what God has done for us. And then we can learn to have self-control like God and learn to be more like him. That's where we'll end the lesson. I appreciate your patience as we went through that this morning. I really hope that's helpful. Again, I'm super aware that anger is an extremely difficult thing to work through with wisdom, a very difficult thing to control. We're going to struggle with it, right? Which means that we just have to be honest about that and really pursue diligently God's solutions. So we'll pray for these things here in just a minute. But if you're here and because of the lesson or for any other reason, if there's a spiritual problem in your life that you recognize needs help, don't be ashamed to bring those things forward before the church so that we can pray for each other and help each other. But let's pray now.